You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. So how did you do yesterday with the thought of the chair, that meditative chair in the middle of the living room of your mind? I want to ask the question today. It's a year of mercy, right? Very comfortable to go toward mercy toward others or accepting God's mercy toward you. What about your mercy toward yourself? Rarely think about that. The key to mental health, the key to a huge proportion of mental health is understanding you and being on your own side. Sounds a little counterintuitive, doesn't it? In this year of mercy toward others and helping others and thinking of others and others and others and others. And we need to think of others. What I find is oftentimes very compassionate people who do wonderful things for the world oftentimes cannot do the same thing for themselves. Very comfortable helping, very comfortable understanding, very comfortable being compassionate. There's a whole category of people who are very comfortable because they are compassion personified and they're very truthful with it to a certain extent. But they're very truthful, they're sincere. Their desire is to, they don't know how to be any other way than always anticipating what the other needs. And doesn't that sound like something we should all ascribe to? Well, unless you are ignoring the poorest of the poor, and that might be you. Are you that person who developed in such a way that your only comfort level and your only place that you feel worth anything is if you're helping someone else or you're living by their descriptions and you're living by their instructions? And we want to address that today. You cannot be who you need to be for God, for yourself, or for others if you don't have mercy for yourself. And we have to, my drive is to define and to begin together about how do we reconcile something that sounds like the antithesis of what we're being asked to do. And actually taking care of ourselves as the ultimate act of mercy and compassion. So we can look a little bit at Jeremiah 29:11 that says, "For I know the thoughts I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." Read it again. Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." Do you have a future and a hope? Do you feel worthy of a future and a hope? Your future and hope, not, oh, well, once my, and then fill in the blank, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my coworker, my spouse, my children, once they have their future, my job is to do it this way. We put in our own context of what it means to lay down your life for your brother, to be selfless, to be giving, to think of the other. But you cannot think of the other unless you think of you. Jesus, I mean, God is saying right here in the Old Testament, and Jesus has said many times, he goes directly to you. He goes to you. He doesn't tell all those people that he worked miracles on. He doesn't tell them to completely give up themselves for another person. He tells them quite the opposite. Give up yourself for God. And God's telling you right here that he wants a future and a hope for you, that he wants peace for you. And the only way you're going to get peace if you're not divided against yourself. Part of that's temptation. Part of that's the stuff that we understand and we're fairly comfortable with, the concepts. But I'll tell you, most people I know and most people I see, sometimes they come from a level of guilt, of feeling that they aren't compassionate enough. And I will, there's kind of a rule of thumb. It's a little bit of there's a little tinge of humor in it among the helping profession. But what you find is the very people that need that extra, need to open up to compassion, need to open up to thinking of the other. Usually they don't say anything wrong. There's not a problem. And oftentimes I will actually tell people, because I do see it and I do believe it, that if you're asking the question that you need to be a better person, you're really already starting to be a better person. So if you are actually even asking that question, could I be devoid of this or that, devoid of feelings, devoid of, you know, am I completely unmerciful? You wouldn't be asking that question, because a truly, truly self-serving person has no desire to ask that question. There was a person, it was related to me, so this was not my direct experience, but there was a person who was absolutely harming his spouse, hiding and lying and taking and just everything you can imagine. And in the realm, and the person I was talking to was confused on how to actually respond. In the realm of just talking things over, confiding in this person's friend, the person who was consulting me, I hear I'm going around and around, I can't give you names, but the person who was consulting me said to the person who was lying and cheating and doing all this stuff, having a great time doing it, saying, you know what? The most important thing is you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror. And the person looked at him and said, oh, I have no problem looking at myself in the mirror. And the person said, well, as long as you can sleep at night, you know, all these little cliches, oh, I sleep just fine. So in that moment, if you take that snapshot, the person who was trying to be the friend was trying to evoke some form of compassion, some kind of mirror to say, do you see what you're doing here? Now, they were just on a friendship basis. So how they approached it is how they approached it. We have those cliches and we use those cliches. It wasn't a therapeutic situation. But that was the very legitimate and telling interchange. Can you look yourself in the mirror? And when someone is having trouble doing that, you're usually on the right road, because you know that something's not right. You're having a struggle with it, which means you have a conscience. People without consciences don't have that issue. It just never comes up. It's not like they think about it and then make a choice. If you have the really true extreme, sometimes I tell you extremes only to give you illustrations. We have all kinds of gray stuff in between, but someone who absolutely has no ability, and they are out there. And I've seen 9 and 10 year olds who've done very horrendous things for whatever reason. Perhaps it was an insult, a physiological insult developing in the womb. A couple of children that I had to work with many years ago had been born of mothers who were severely addicted. So that can change the biochemistry of the brain. It can change the biochemistry of the being. And so certain parts just don't happen. They just don't get connected. And that's a pretty dangerous situation. So they do exist. And that is on a very tiny end of an opposite spectrum. But my point here to you is, if you're asking the question, if you're listening to things, if you're reading books, if you keep your eyes open, if you find yourself constantly thinking, I'm not good enough, what am I doing, I'm not thoughtful enough, the reality is that the people who are not thoughtful at all, the people who cannot compassion, who cannot have compassion, who do not know how to empathize, it is not in their chemistry to actually empathize with another person's situation, they would never be there asking the question. They would never be there seeking out. Now, they will have their own path, and there's certainly redemption for everybody, and that's between them and God. So I'm starting this road today because we're going to look at compassion. We looked yesterday, worry versus concern, what that's all about. And we want to really touch you because you are looking and you want to be better, or you wouldn't be seeking it out. So on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking about, we're going to continue on about, are you worrying yourself needlessly, expending needless energy? And how do we nurture the concern that you have? And to also give yourself a break. God wants a future and a hope for you. That's His desire. And the only way that that will happen is when you sit back and go, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to follow that path. All right. We'll see you on the other side of the break. You can call 573-4-BREAD-4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
About mercy toward yourself. And why is that an important thing? Well, let's first go back a little bit, finish up about worrying versus concern, and how one is a waste and one is born of compassion. One is a compassionate gift to you and a compassionate gift to others. The other is just mental busy work. Now, if you're like me, you spend a lot of your time in mental busy work. You spend a lot of time worrying about things, and we would not buy anything if we did not have a worry. And as has been found out for a very long time, just cause someone to worry a little bit, plant the seed of worry and doubt, and you get them to buy things or act in a certain way, in a predictable way. It's very predictable. We're very trainable. So knowing that, that's not a bad thing. That's our nature. And it can be used for the good. It can be used to just string you along, or it can be used to buy unnecessary things. Look around your house. How many unnecessary things do you have? I'll tell you something really, which I know you all can identify with. How many different kinds of shampoo do I need to know that there is not a miracle shampoo out there? There's not a miracle that's going to make my hair the most awesome, gorgeous hair that I had when I was 16. And yet, I will get a shampoo bottle, shampoo my hair just like everybody else. And when it's not exactly wonderful, or even if it's fine, but then I see another one, and I think, oh, well, no, that one has coconut in it, so maybe that's the key. Or I see another one, and no, that one has argan oil, so there, oh, that's got to be it. There's always that, finally, they've discovered the secret ingredient. the shampoo to end all shampoos, but it won't happen. But what it does is it causes that little seed of worry and that little seed of, oh my gosh, maybe I'm doing something wrong for my hair. Or maybe I'm, you know, I'm hurting it more than I'm helping it. Maybe this one is the answer. We're so primed to grasp those little seeds of worry, doubt, fear that we in the little and the big areas of life. So how do we, and we're always going to do that. I'm not going to stop buying the next best shampoo. You know, it's always going to happen, I'm sure, somewhere. And as I'm talking to you, I'm remembering some commercial from when I was like 10 years old of a beautiful woman from Hawaii with this hair that just glimmered and glistened and never stopped. And I can't remember which shampoo she was using, but it doesn't even exist anymore. But I think it had like some little essence of something, you know, it had the essence of pearl or the essence of coconut or something that made it, you know, yes, that's what they do on the islands. And so therefore, if I do it, I will be, I wish I could remember the name of that shampoo. I don't see it anymore. It might've been Breck. I think that was the name. I don't even know if they make it anymore, but that was it. So how many of those shampoos have come and gone since the beginning of time? If you want to do a fun little exercise sometime just for a little mind break, just Google something like, you know, a shampoo from the 1800s or a Women's Day article from 1901, or you'll just find it's the same thing. It's just different stuff. It has a different label. It has a different look, but there's always some exotic ingredient. And sometimes we find those exotic ingredients actually are harmful for us. But there's always something with an essence of or a ground something or other that really doesn't do anything because it doesn't absorb into our skin. It doesn't do anything but make us feel a whole lot better. So here we go. Yesterday, we were talking about that Chapter 4, See Hidden Possibilities from Riding the Dragon. And it really revolved a lot about the difference between worry and the difference between concern. And I'll repeat it today because it was so fun. Mark Twain, and Robert J. Wick says, Mark Twain also recognized the total foolishness of worrying when he wrote, quote, "My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened." And how many of us do that? We worry. Now, part of that worry is going to help us protect our children. We worry they're going to fall. We worry they're going to get hit by a car. We worry. That's normal. That's normal. See, and that's the thing, is that these normal actions, these normal feelings, these normal alert systems get co-opted by your own desires. They feed on themselves. Then you get to be you find yourself in a stronger level of anxiety, a stronger cycle of anxiety. But worrying is something that, as you already know, it never prevents anything and it never controls anything. You can worry about, money. You can worry about, your car from here until your car finally breaks down. It's not going to change a situation. You can be concerned that that could be inevitability because you know the nature of vehicles. So what do you do with true concern? You without emotion, make sure your oil's changed, make sure you have good tires, those kinds of things. But worry, worry, worry doesn't change anything. We're all prone to it. We hear of a little child getting harmed or killed or kidnapped. And in fact, I'll give you a little thing I read today, just as a little public service announcement. And I actually love IKEA and they're dealing with stuff. But evidently, some of the furniture that they made recently, some of the chest of drawers, so all of you who have IKEA chest of drawers, there was like, I think, I don't know if it was around the globe or if it was in a particular country, but there were 6 children who had died from chest of drawers being pulled over or falling over. And then they're answering that. It occurred, they got the information, and they are answering that and they're fixing that. That's all I could get from the news article. But so listen up if you happen, no matter where you're buying your stuff from. So those kinds of, that's concern. But what happens then, we start to get scared. Everything could harm my child. And part of that is normal to a certain extent. So I want you to be, again, very aware. Don't just shine things on. Be concerned. And now that you heard this thing about IKEA, this is the difference between concern and worry. Now you have something to be concerned over, not worry about, because concern will cause you to do something reasonable and rational. You'll go around your house now, hopefully, and look at your bookcases. Make sure they're secure, secure to the wall. Don't assume that your child won't climb on them. Go ahead and make sure that you have things that you thought were out of your child's reach and really okay, or they know better, and make sure it's secure. Because things like that do happen, and we do have people who have dire consequences from them. So rather than worry, 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 take that information and turn it into a true concern. It can even be concern with urgency. You could do that today, and I hope you do. Go check your house. Just take a look. You might be fine. Don't distance yourself, as we talked about many times, thinking, well, that's IKEA. I don't get IKEA. Well, IKEA is the example because it happened, just like you have recalls in cars all the time. You don't know when which one's going to come down the pike, but what it can do is give you an index of concern so that you go around and just assess everything and say, you know, I'll look at my own place and see maybe if I've put something together in a way that I always was kind of a little worried about, but nothing's ever happened, so I'm not going to deal with it. I think it's time that you start looking at true concern versus idle worry. So there's my public service announcement about a little news article I read today. So when we talk about worry, Robert J. Wicks says worry is like a spiritual treadmill. It exercises the feeling of compassion. It is good in that it reminds us to care. All right. So we just saw that as the example with IKEA. However, as with a treadmill, worry doesn't really get us very far. Whereas concern, which also wakes us up to the needs around us, is different in that it leads us to identify the appropriate actions we can take, then lets us relax and be at peace. So, the news story about IKEA, 6 children are dead because of furniture toppling over. And that's IKEA. I would be willing to bet if you looked at all the different furniture manufacturers, each one of them will have a similar story of something that happened. And usually it is things like bookcases or dressers that you don't think can be toppled over, but they are. So that right there, that particular out there furniture store, don't distance yourself, but don't run around worrying. What it did was, as he said, it causes you to wake up to the needs, wake up to the concern, and then take appropriate action. Walk around your house and take a look. And don't just go, oh, well, you know, I don't have IKEA. Just go ahead and take a look. Today, your refrigerator, everything, take a look. Make sure it's sturdy. And there you are. There you go. Well, I am Dr. Michelle, 5734BREAD4. We will see you on the other side of the break. And you can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So what do you do when you are overwhelmed and you are filled with worry and anxiety, and now you're just kind of like a free-floating ball of anxiety and worry and concern, and you're just, everything's a hot topic to you. You don't have time to sit down. You have time to breathe. You don't have time to go to that living room in your, the chair in the middle of your mental living room. You are filled with all kinds of things. Well, that's when you have to back up, and just as you can, we have the mentality, I think, of we have to do it all at once and we want instant results. And so you all know it on a diet. You all know it on exercise. You think, all right, I need to get some exercise. But we've already dismissed the fact that walking from your car to the grocery store is exercise and can be exercise. And maybe parking further away from the door of the store is exercise. Doing something, using your purse to do arm curls, that's exercise. There's all kinds. It's not concentrated exercise. But what happens, a very common theme is everyone says, well, I'm gonna go to the gym. Well, I better get some clothes. Well, I don't look so great in those clothes, so I better shop until I find clothes I feel okay in. Then I have to get the right shoes. Pretty soon, 2 and 3 months have gone by. And then you're not exercising. So if you can start with the little things that you've already dismissed, the common sense things, we do not even trust common sense things. I've done that myself. I've grown some herbs. And for some reason, I thought, well, maybe my herbs aren't good. Maybe the herbs at the store are better. Why would that be? There's no reason in the world. It's an herb. It comes from the ground. I have ground. I put in the seed. I get an herb. So my basil is probably better and fresher and more awesome than the basil that came from France or wherever it comes from in my groceries, Chile, wherever they happen to grow it. So what is that? It's not just that why would that even be a part of me? Why is it better? Some of us It's a constant conundrum is the thing about tap water. And I have the same thing. So we think, okay, our tap water is bad. It has chlorine in it. It has fluoride in it. It has all these different things. It's got chemicals. They think now, I know I'm getting off subject, but this is like the public service day. Now they're wondering, they're linking, perhaps we have a problem with fertility in this country because of all the contraceptives that are leaking into our water system. Because we have filters and chemicals to get rid of certain things, but some other chemicals from our pharmaceuticals that are passed through the body, they're too small. The little chemical molecules are too small. And so they get into our system. We have all kinds of things, psychiatric medications, blood pressure medications, contraceptives, hormones. We have it all. So then we go, oh, we're really scared. So we have to get the filter. Everything has to be filtered. Well, that's fine. But it's a lot easier to go get big pallets of bottled water. And sometimes our bottled water is just bottled from a tap and it's in plastic. And so it goes through hot trucks. The plastic starts leaking what it leaks, which can be estrogenic or can be harmful. And there you go. So really, what's better? Well, I don't have an answer for that. I do a little of everything because I think, well, I have to have water. So sometimes we'll do the bottled water. Sometimes it comes from the tap. Sometimes it comes from the refrigerator. You know, it's that we can become very overwhelmed, but we can become very trained to somehow think plastic bottled water with BPAs and everything else in the plastic sitting around in trucks, not really knowing where and how it's being bottled and what really is in it. We somehow think that's healthier. So what are we going to do? We've got to get back to our center and remember that we are hardwired to heal. We have enzymes in our bodies. We have livers to help us break down things. There are things that do overwhelm the body for sure. There are poisons we can't recover from, but give yourself a little bit of a break in knowing that you are battling way more things mentally and physically than you ever thought. If you actually could sit down and take a look And maybe when you're further along in the great beyond, you'll have the privilege of taking a little glimpse. I don't even know a millisecond of it. But you have a little glimpse into the amazingness, all the things that you never would even think of that you're battling right now. You are an amazing survival machine. So I want you to know that mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, in every way, you are an amazing survival machine and a thriving machine. You go 24/7. When you're asleep, you're still doing it. When you're awake, you're still doing it. When you're fretting and worrying and don't think you can go on another day, you're still doing it. When you're facing a life-threatening illness, you're still doing it. So just keep that in mind. Take heart. Take heart. We tend to think that we're just one stagnant thing and then something hits us and we can't recover. That's a lie. People recover from the craziest stuff. And I've seen people, I have a friend right now who has a father who had a very massive stroke and they're all preparing for him to go. And he's very elderly, way, way up in his 80s. And you know, it's kind of like, well, just hold on. Let's see what happens. And they said, well, nothing can happen. So much has been taken away. But sure enough, within 3 and 4 weeks, he's kind of like looking around, and then in another couple of weeks, he's saying, how come that noise is happening over there? I don't really like, it's starting to get a little ornery because personality's coming back. So you have no idea. It's not over till it's over. So looking at how do we turn our fear-based worry into concern? I like that idea that worry is like a spiritual treadmill. It exercises the feeling. It's as if it's compassion. It's kind of like it's a prelude to compassion. It's a taste of compassion. However, it isn't compassion. It just evokes the feeling, and it can be a good wake up to that which we need to be concerned about. And then the concern takes us to appropriate action. So when we talk about worry and we talk about what do we focus on, what do we make most famous in our brain? There's a little story that Dr. Wicks talks about in addressing how do I let go of worry? How do I let go of things? It's easy to say, just let go of that. A lot of people have said that to me. I've even told other people, you've got to let go of that. But the real answer is, if I really sit back, take a breath, and know, I understand. That's where compassion and empathy comes in. Because I know what it's like to have something that you think you've let go of, but you haven't. And you know you need to. It does not mean your memory will be wiped out. But here's what he says. He talks about a woman who was trying to let go of so much that had gone wrong in her life, very debilitating in her life. And she said, how do I let go? I've tried and nothing seems to work for me. And he says, this is a natural problem. The Russian writer Maxim Gorky used to tell about a game he played with his brother. It simply involved the task of going into a corner and trying not to think about a white bear. It revolved around the simple idea that the more we try to let go of something, the more we become tied to it. And he gives an example I was just talking about. Just think of dieting. When we go on a diet, we wind up thinking about the very things we wish to give up. Diets, like worry, can wake us up to the need for change. They can be the fuse to enkindle new motivation to remove whatever addictions we have in our lives. But in the long run, diets don't work. Food dieters usually gain back all the weight they've lost, if not more. Like dieters, worriers not only don't control what troubles them, but often wind up worse off. Experiencing sleepless nights and feeling overwhelmed, they often lose the joy in their own lives and feel more futility than when they begin their preoccupation with the problems in their lives. Concern is a very different process. While it may look like worrying, we are not paralyzing. It frees even when the desired results are not achieved. Concern doesn't deny there's a problem. It faces it directly. However, it then musters the thoughts, how can I sit with this trouble in a good way? Worry encourages us to spend all our energy wringing our hands over something. Concern looks at how we can show mercy toward the issue or person involved and thus respond with compassion. So what if the person or issue involved is you? Are you going to look at you with mercy? Are you going to respond to you with compassion? Are you going to empathize with you? These are very important questions toward your work on your own mental health, your own spiritual health, and your own physical health. Very important. It is so counterintuitive, especially to people who are trying to walk the good road, who are trying to walk following Christ's example. But Christ did not. He followed God. And he went a hard road and he suffered, but he didn't suffer by mindless worry. He embodied it all. And that's one thing we have to get to. The only way we can do that is by having mercy toward ourselves, oxygen mask on ourselves first, compassion toward yourself. And all that means is a little tweaking of the constant anxiety and worry into sitting for a moment with your concerns, which are legitimate, and the trouble that you're experiencing. See you on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Well, a little concern goes a long way, and a concern is the healthy sister of worry. So worry can tip us off. You're going to have it. Don't worry. Don't worry about your worry. Don't worry about it. You're always going to have some worry, and it can always get excessive. We know that. We start getting scared, especially when some things happen. We hear about this IKEA thing. Furniture topples over, but it helps us make it. It's always these little touchstones that make us at first a little overboard in our concern. There'll be a rash of a little bit tightening the reins just a bit, but then you'll loosen them up until a nice place of balance. Just like when you hear of something occurring with kids, let's say your little boys are at a stage where they always go into the ladies' bathroom with you, and then they're starting to get a little older, and you think, okay, we can go to the men's room, and then you hear about something happening to a child, and then you start tightening the reins again for a while. But it's this kind of tug, this give and take, this little bit of stepping out in the water, stepping back. Give yourself a break. Have mercy upon yourself. Compassion toward yourself. Soothe that person in you that was scared to begin with as a little girl or a little boy, knowing that you had to tough it out in the world all by yourself. At least you felt that way, or you were thrown under the bus or thrown to the wolves time and time again, or you had everything was going fine and you had someone really do a dirty deal for you. You were just excited about your house. You thought you were going into the best neighborhood in the world, and it was not disclosed to you that there's black mold in all throughout your house. And now what do? You have a mortgage. You have an unhealthy situation. You cannot leave. You cannot move. This happens all the time. All the time, those kinds of things occur. And it can just eat you up inside because you don't know which way to turn. That's why it's good to then take the breath, go to that the chair in the living room of your mind, open up all the windows and doors, let whatever comes through those windows and doors come through while you're sitting there. You can have God on the throne next to you or whatever. You can have a big wolf by your side, whatever makes you feel secure in that chair, and just simply watch it go by. Great exercise, because you'll find that what you're doing is you're objectively viewing those very real things that are problematic in your life without getting ignited to the fear and chasing one thing around in fear and then letting the other things pile up. So I want you to really take this to heart. So what do we do? So rather than worrying about these things, what do we do? Well, let's go back and see how Robert Wicks is putting this again in a terms of food and diet, because we all can kind of relate to that. The attitude of mercy coupled with the spirit of humility is at the heart of true concern. It helps us to determine, given our own limits, what we can do about something. Maybe it is practiced with a kind word. Possibly it is calling someone up and just listening to his or her problems without getting so distraught ourselves that we avoid contacting the person again. I like that. And if you think that just listening isn't a powerful gift, ask yourself about the last time you needed a kind ear. Did you have friends who heard you out? Did they do so without getting upset themselves? Or did they quickly respond with their answers to your problem? Simple concern is quite powerful because it involves us in the problems of life without allowing us to get trapped by them. Let's use dieting as a metaphor again. People who constantly worry about food miss the rest of life, whereas people concerned about a healthy, full living have an attitude that makes food enjoyable and one as a gift of life among many. Rather than worrying about food, those concerned with healthy living eat a little less, eat a little more slowly, enjoy a sweet now and then, and walk a little more. These littles add up to a lot. A little concern goes a long way. A lot of worry takes us nowhere. Going back to his treadmill example. So the simple lesson here is that discerning between the two processes and making the transition from being a worrier to a concerned person is an enjoyable, intriguing, and worthwhile project to undertake. Reading the seasons and feeling that life will then result when we are better. Reading the seasons and feeling the life will then result when we are better able to sense possibilities that may be hidden for the moment when life seems dark. At such times, hopeful attention and patience are truly good companions. Hopeful attention and patience. Telling ourselves that even in the worst of times, hidden growth is going on is one way to trigger an attitude that will allow these companions to help us see life in a new way when the timing is right. So our companions of hopeful attention and patience are going to help us live the reality that there is growth underneath the hard, cold surface that's happening for you now. Back to Jeremiah. For I know the thoughts I think of you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. That's what he wants for us. So even though it's quite simple, it can seem a little overwhelming. So let's go back a bit to talk about this attitude of mercy and asking yourself about when he talks about asking about just listening. And I'm going to go back to the, how about just listening to yourself? Listening, you be the ear. Let God be the ear. Because many of you will come back to me and say, but I have no one to listen to me. I've lost everyone. Everyone has turned their back. And when that happens, it can be a terrible, lonely, frightening place. And you will go back down. There'll be moments when you're back down in your puddle and you're crying just like you were 5 years old. That's okay, because what does he say through Jeremiah? He knows what he thinks about you. And he does not want you to have pain and evil and awful. He wants you to have peace and a future and a hope. So we have these lovely companions. If you just hold on a little bit longer, you will see the little buds growing through the ground. But if you spend all your time not seeing it because you're enmeshed in worrying, you won't give way to the healthy concern that allows you using dieting, because who can't identify with that? I know people who will not eat avocado, let's say, because they've got it in their head about how much fat it has. Well, yes, it does. And I remember back when I was going as a young woman, you know, the diet to end all diets. We're always on a diet, always on a diet. But then something said to me, even in my, didn't even think I believed in God, but I thought, you know, there's something wrong where I cannot eat something on God's good earth that is grown for food. There's something wrong when I say, I will never eat your avocado. That's not right. Now, you may not like avocados. You don't have to eat them. That's why we have variety. But the point is if you're going to be so obsessed about that and you're missing out, well, you'll still make up for those calories somewhere else. As he said, you have a little less than. You walk a little more than. You mix it up a little bit. And then you're retooling and rebalancing, which is what we're trying to do all the time. So when you become obsessed, you focus on, like that Russian gentleman, Mr. Gorky, talked about he did with his brother. Their little game was going in the corner and trying not to think about a white bear. And when I read that sentence, I did a little test with myself without even realizing it, and realizing just hearing that, I couldn't imagine someone saying, go in the corner over there and don't think of a white bear. Well, what are you going to think of? You're going to only think of a white bear. And it would be an amazing exercise to get to the point where you didn't think about that white bear, where you were just open. So recapping here so we can move on, because we're going to talk tomorrow a little bit about, I want to move out of this just a bit and go into, what do you do when you really are in that darkness, because of anything that I do here, I do not want you to feel that it's an all or nothing proposition on any given program, because there's honor to be paid, and part of your own self-compassion and part of your own self-mercy is to understand that you are in the darkness when you're in the darkness and it hurts. Give yourself compassion. Don't tell yourself, I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't be obsessing. It's part of the awareness. Again, if you chastise yourself, you're telling yourself to go in the corner and not think of a white bear. If you keep, I shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't be so obsessed. I shouldn't be so worried. I shouldn't be so selfish. So whatever it is, you're going to then get caught up in that little circle. And you're going to go around and around and around and around. And again, it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. You want to breathe, open up, sit in that chair in the middle of the living room of your mind, open the doors, open the windows, show compassion and mercy on yourself. Keep in your mind that the God sitting in your throne in that room with you is saying to you on a running tape continually, I know what I think about you. Don't you put the words in my mouth. I have no thoughts of evil, but only of peace. I do not want evil to come your way. I only want to give you a future and a hope. And here's your hope. So we'll look at this a little bit on the other, not the other side of the break. We'll look at this tomorrow. This is Dr. Michelle. You have been listening to Dr. Michelle Live. We will see you all back here on the road tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.